Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame. The highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn, but are so grateful that we did. Milarepa and the demons. Born in the 11th century, Milarepa was the murderer who became a Buddhist monk and had to stand face to face with the horror of his past. Hearing his story is what changed Dr. Linnea's life. How do we face and accept the pain that we feel and have caused? How do we release the shame and the guilt? How do we deal with the demons that are crouched in the corners of our house waiting for us to come home? Dr. Linnea from Heal Your Nervous System and I are discussing all this and more today. Please, please get in touch if you relate to what you hear. You can contact us at either contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK. To have your story read on the podcast, please put survivor story either at the top or in the subject line.
So it is February 2012. I like to do a little introduction about what was going on that year, but 2012 was a big year because I was utterly convinced that the world was going to end according to the Mayan prophecy.
Really?
Oh, convinced, like without a shadow of a doubt. I was like, here we go. This is it. This is the, and I was at drama school and I remember being like, why am I still here?
Was it the Mayan prophecy?
And I was like, it's gonna happen. So 2012 was a big year, mainly because when that day came and went, I was like, okay, we're still here. Anyway, that's a segue into what 2012 was like. But in this moment, it is February 2012, and we are walking down Street Milan in the, was it on the outskirts of Milan?
Yeah, the outskirts of Milan.
And in this moment, and I'm going to say Dr. Linnea, why do you think you've got no friends?
I was in a very, very depressed and burned out state, right? So what happened was that it was physically, it was just, everything was gray. Everything was depressing. I was just really wondering, why should I even go to this meeting? You know, it was a big meeting, but I didn't want to go there. So I got this email from a tech startup kind of newsletter that I was very involved with and I was really interested in. And it was this email, it was a guest post from a guy named Jerry Colonna, who is a big, Silicon Valley and tech startups coach. And he ended up becoming a really, really good friend of mine. So what happens?
I was going to say, did you know him before this? Before this?
No, absolutely not. Like, but that email was such a turning point in my life that I.
Okay. You know, sorry, I had to carry on. So you've got this email.
And so what happens is, essentially, this blog post, it was about leadership, etc. But the point was that there was the story of Milarepa, this Buddhist monk, who essentially is a Buddhist master. He has this like terrible life. He used to kill people, etc. And then he becomes a monk, a Buddhist master, eventually, right? And so he learns to face his demons instead of chasing them away. And so the story of Milarepa begins, you know, he enters his cave on the top of a mountain and he's attempting to live this life of solitude and contemplation, right? But he's gone out to collect some woods. And when he comes back, he discovers that he has these guests that weren't there before. And it was a bunch of scary demons. And they just had taken over his home. And so he's like, you know, what can I do? He's filled with terror. He's filled with, you know, he doesn't know what to do. So the first thing he does is tries to get rid of them. So he goes chasing them, but they really don't care. In fact, they become even fiercer, even more scary. So at this point, he's like, okay, what can I try? So what he does is, let's see if maybe they won't listen to me, but if I start teaching them the Dharma, you know, the Buddhist teachings, maybe they will become compassionate and leave me alone. But that doesn't really work because after a while he's been, you know, teaching them about the Dharma and preaching about meditation, about, you know, a life of compassion. The demons are just there. They're just, they are completely untouched by his words. They're still there. They're just looking at him. And so, he starts looking deep into each of the demons' eyes. He bows to them and says, it looks like we're going to have to be together in this cave. So I bow to whatever teaching you're here to give. And so all of the demons, all of a sudden, disappear except for one. So there's this huge demon that is super scary that, he's just staying there. He won't leave. So Milarepa goes even further. He steps forwards. He gives himself completely to the demon. And he puts his head in the demon's mouth and says, eat me if you wish. And that's where the demon bows at him and disappears. And so the big thing that I realized at that point was that, you know, trying to fix my situation by doing more or by just feeling, you know, that I have to perform better or do better and I will finally be fixed and I will finally be okay. Or trying to, you know, I was very involved in things like, you know, nonprofit, like trying to do things that sort of try are with the goal of essentially bypassing your suffering, it's actually not going to change anything. So that was a big moment of revelation for me.
I feel quite emotional already. I mean, I always get emotional on these chats, but I do feel very, very emotional, mainly because of the just the particular facets of that story and how it falls out. And the different tactics which he undertakes to be able to battle these things. Because I think that's a very, very familiar thing. And it is often the thing that feels like it's going to work the least that works the best. Of him going, I accept you. What are you here to teach me? Rather than trying to fight these things off. And I think the one that really sticks out to me is the one about trying to teach them. That really sticks out to me because my therapist said to me recently, and I always know she's right when I get annoyed. I always know she's right when I get upset and don't want to do it. I know that she's right. As much as I hate it, I'm like, you hit the nail on the head there, because one thing that she said to me, and she said it's a very particular part of healing that people reach, and I think I'm reaching now, where she said you've got to stop telling and trying to teach others, trying to teach your family, she was basically like, get off your soapbox and stop preaching, stop trying to point it out. Yes, you may know, but no one's going to listen. No one's going to listen. One, because it's really annoying when people do that. And also because they don't want to right now. And this kind of thing of just going, and I know it applies to a different part of the story, but the acceptance of something is just so, so wonderfully powerful and beautiful. And yeah releases the fight. And it's not about, because I often, I mean, when my therapist said that to me, my reaction was, I feel like I'm giving in. I feel like I'm giving in if I do that. I'm fighting. And she went, no, this is a different kind of battle. This is, you know, acceptance and allowing, and it's okay. This story is just, it's so powerful on so many levels. And I just love the fact that the thing about this story is that you were a surgeon at the time, you said, and, you know, on your way to a publishing meeting and all of this. And I love, because I've sort of involved in some things, but often when I get emails from them, I'm like, ugh, I delete them straight away. Like, don't even look. And I just love the fact that you got this email and went, what's this? From a guy you didn't even know. And then this story just shot a beam of light through you in this sort of road to Damascus moment of revelation. It's amazing. And this is why I'm such a huge believer in a higher power and spiritual intervention, universal intervention, whatever it may be, because that was sent to you at the right moment. So when this happened, you were on this page, what were the next movements that followed getting that email?
So, you know, at the time, like, I was really in the darkness when it comes to I had no idea about anything. I think what really, the whole point of that was stop running from things. Mm-hmm. And then there's this, and accepting that all the things that you are doing are ways of running away from that idea of radical self-inquiry, which is also a concept that then I learned from Jerry at the time. And it's this, you know, this idea of, I'm not looking at things from a place of fixing. I'm looking at things from a place of compassion and understanding. That doesn't mean that I'm okay with these things. That doesn't mean that I, you know, I'm just going to say, oh, you know, this is the way it is, and I just have to be unhappy and be anxious and feel like no matter what I do, it's not enough. Mm. No, but the first step to going through these things is really accepting them, embracing them, looking into their eyes. And I think what this story is about, like this idea of demons, it's not necessarily that those are negative parts of ourselves. They're just parts that we can bring to light, right? They're there to protect us in a way. And so the point is, how can I bring this forth and understand why it's there, how it came to be, and what is it trying to protect me from? That's the whole point. What is it that I'm so scared about that, you know, I have all these barriers and all these ways of protecting myself? That's the
point. And it's interesting. I had a discussion with a guy here called Ben West, who's a mental health campaigner. We discussed this the other day about how the difference between your way of coping is marginal, that it doesn't, one person's way to cope, to run, can be through work or be through exercise or be through volunteering or, you know, things that seemingly, I mean, they are really brilliant things, but someone else's coping mechanism is drugs and alcohol. And they do the same job. This just this numbing and this protecting from what's actually happening, from what it is inside us that is just like, I see it as like a hand around my spine, just clenching around my heart, these just roots tangled within me. And in my case, I definitely wasn't a surgeon. I was completely destroyed. And all I was doing was using anything, drugs, alcohol, sex, anything, just to try and escape these things. And I've said this many times before in this podcast, but it was only when I entered rehab and everything I had was taken away from me. I mean, everything. I wasn't even allowed books that weren't specifically prescribed to me. And being left with these demons, essentially. I was put in a room in rehab in rural Spain. And when I got in there were just a bunch of demons sat there being like, what's up? Like, well, what are we going to do? And I was so angry, I was so upset, went through all these different phases. And it's one thing that I found quite powerful, and I wonder if I can use this analogy and how you maybe feel about it, but I didn't understand what was going on with me. I thought that the parts, my reaction, that my nervous system worked, I thought that was just who I was. And then I was diagnosed. I had CPTSD, BPD, and ADHD, and depression, anxiety. And it was when I learned their names that I felt I was able to have a discussion with these things. I was able to talk to them. I was able to, and have them talk to each other and start this dialogue and start this healing process. And because before I was just like, who are all these people here? I don't know how to talk to you. I don't know who are you? You're new. Like I didn't know what was going on. And it was only by learning the name that I in some way managed to free myself and have a conversation and go, and I don't know. And now there are some of these parts which originally looked so scary and so devilish and demons that were there. Then I'm like, that's a pretty awesome part of me that I actually really like. I think that's kind of really cool. And it's bizarre how your perspective changes just by having this, by changing tactic, by acceptance. And it's done so gently as well. I think when it's done gently, it's just, it's the best way forward.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, well, I didn't have that knowledge at the time, right? So the problem is that there was none of this conversation was ongoing at the time. It was really hard to get. That's how I started my own healing journey and my understanding of myself, of things that were happening. And then everything started changing, right? But one of the things that I see now that helps people the most is understanding that this coping strategy, you know, they may be dysfunctional, they may be something that even gets us into a state of unhealth with a diagnosed condition, but they're there for a reason, and they developed out of a mix of, you know, genetic traits, environmental traits, the way we grew up, etc. And they were all ways that shaped how our nervous system learned to cope in those moments for us to survive. Yeah. And so when start understanding that, you know, like, this isn't something that, you know, is your fault or that you need to feel ashamed of. This is something that is dysfunctional right now because it's not serving you anymore. But at the time when it first started originating, it was helpful to keep you functioning. And so now that your capacity is expanding and it's growing, now you have a different perspective and you can change that stress response. You can expand and you can understand. And some of the roles of these protective parts can be released so that you can start, you know, coping in a different way and addressing stress and external factors in a different way.
Yeah. And acknowledging responses, acknowledging patterns, and seeing what has been helpful and what hasn't been helpful. Because in the before time, I know that I was definitely just repeating the same thing over and over again, going, maybe this time it will work because it felt so safe. I felt if I did anything else, I'd be putting myself in real danger. Even though this tactic that I've been using had literally never once proved successful, I was still going, no, it's going to work. And I think it is really great to acknowledge the fact that these things emerge from a place of trying, of protection, of self-preservation, of these things were created to try and help you, even though they are not helpful now, there was no part of you in the beginning that was going, what's going to be the worst thing here? It was your body trying to protect you. One thing that I discovered recently that's been quite big for me, and I'm still sort of working my way through it, but I've always known I was an identical twin in the womb and lost my identical twin before birth. And like quite far down the line. And I've been reading all these studies about womb twin survivors and how there can be a lot of abandonment, a lot of abandonment trouble, a lot of feeling like you're not enough, a lot of feeling that there's two sides to your personality. There's so much surrounding it. And so much of it makes sense. And I was like, oh my gosh, that we don't know. And you don't know that you're being informed from that early on. You don't know that you're being...
Yeah. In fact, there's actually a lot of research going on this kind of trauma. And, you know, we talk about how epigenetics and life events really shape how trauma manifests in our life. And so, for example, I can imagine that, you know, for a mother, especially for me, you know, I can imagine I'm a mom of twins, among other things. I can't even imagine what a mother must go through losing a twin, right? And what this creates from an emotional but also physical perspective, and the amount of trauma this can also pass down to the other child. So I can totally understand, and we know that we're starting to understand how trauma is also passed down from generations to generations.
Yes.
And so one of the ways, it's not actually the event or the memory of the trauma that gets passed down, but one of the hypotheses is that what gets passed down is a sort of sensory sensitivity to things, mm-hmm. and a sort of stress preparedness. So when the child is born, this child is actually carrying not just what happens in the womb, but also what their mother and their grandmother and their ancestors were exposed to. So yeah. Again, this is just the beginning of understanding how these things happen from a from a biological perspective, but we see that it's happening. Yeah. So having those pieces and putting together those pieces of our life is something that we can only do, after we've grown up a little bit and we start putting the pieces together, understanding maybe some of those demons that we carry are not necessarily ours, you know, they are coming from past generations or even from our parents. And so understanding that and accepting it, I think it relieves us of some of the shame, some of the sense of guilt that we may feel about things that are not working in our lives. So accepting that and going to that level of self-compassion is that really the first step to be able to go ahead in that journey.
It's so interesting that you talk about this and we'll talk about generational trauma, because it's something that I've been thinking about so much recently because of healing my relationship with my mum, for example. And she's very, she will admit it too. Like, there's never been any, I've never not loved her, but we did have a very strained relationship. And before I went to rehab, and I think I've now seen her as a human and seen her for what she went through as well, which has been so powerful to not see her as a superhuman. But this thing about generational trauma, though, is a story that we got told in rehab about a man who was exhibiting all the symptoms of PTSD or CPTSD, but seemingly they couldn't find a root cause for this trouble. They couldn't find why he was so distressed. There'd been no history of abuse. He wasn't financially struggling. He was career-wise, he was fine. He was in a healthy relationship. They couldn't discover what it was that was plaguing him so much. And then they went back a bit and it turned out both of his parents were Holocaust survivors. And this trauma, this had been passed down into him. And I think it is utterly fascinating.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How these things that have happened don't purely and merely affect the individual. It's sort of, it's a little bit like the, you know, a butterfly wing flapping and creating something. It's, and why I now see the importance as well of healing, not just for you, but for those around you.
Absolutely. That's one of the key things. And it's important, not just for yourself, but because you're changing the biological matrix around you. And so whatever healing you are able to accomplish within yourself, this has a ripple effect on people around you. And this isn't just with children, with parents and children. This is, you know, with partners, friends. It has a huge ripple effect. It affects how we show up as leaders, it's really, for me, this is like the key message, because as a mother of four, for me, one of the biggest problems that we have is what kind of world, of planet we're passing down to the generations, right? Yeah. So if we cannot start seeing everything as connected in a real and biological way, this is not a spiritual idea only. This is a biological network that we're all part of. And so when we take our own part of healing and really radical self-inquiry and implementing changes in our lives, this has a ripple effect, not just on ourselves, not just on our children, but on the generations around us and on the planet. So this is a foundational concept of Buddhism, but it's now becoming a foundational concept of biology, as we are starting to see that biology is really demonstrating a lot of the things that spirituality and traditional ancient cultures have known at an intuitive level for thousands of years. So finally, we're starting to bridge that gap and understand why these things work and why our ancestors were able to live in harmony with nature. And unfortunately, we aren't. Yeah. So this is a key part of this work, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's incredibly important because it becomes a far less holistic equation and therefore so much more tangible and easily accessible to people who maybe struggle with that connection, struggle with that kind of, with that belief. To sort of look at actual pure and tangible evidence of something is really, really powerful. I know a lot of people who come into AA and the fellowship of whatever fellowship of any kind. And I definitely did at the start when, you know, you come in and the word God is like everywhere. and I came in being like, this is not me at all. I went to an all girls, you know, Christian boarding school as well. But the strange evidence that I've been shown of not God itself, but just of doing something that is outside, something is happening outside of me. And the way I operate, what I do, the choices I make affect not only me, but the world in a positive manner. And affect, and even, I mean, my niece and my nephew, who I love them so much. It's a bit silly. I remember when my niece was born, my brother said it was so funny because I came into the room and like leaned over her and went, "I will die for you." And he went, "It's funny that you said, 'I will die.' I will die, not 'I would die.'" "I will die for you." I think about them and the kind of world that they are growing up in, and I want them to be as happy as possible. I want them to be as safe as possible. And what can I do to make that happen? You know? And just the idea of doing service, of helping others. It's this glorious, glorious release. And it's like you can see it. And I think that's what so many people struggle with when it comes to healing and stuff, is that you can't see it, you can't touch it, but you can. Yeah, it's...
I would say, yeah, it's very tangible in the way, as you said, you know, a feeling of safety in the world. And also, you know, we know that also from a biological perspective, we know that as a human being, we need to connect, like the essence of happiness, as we have learned to study, is of course not just having our basic needs met and emotional needs met, but one of the biggest determinants is, can I connect to something that I feel is larger than myself?
Yeah.
But the problem is when we come to this from a place of of not feeling enough, of not feeling okay in our own skin, then the risk is it becomes spiritual bypassing. You know, we're trying to do something good because we're not feeling good enough. So when we are able to switch to feeling that we are doing this from a place of, you know, fulfillment of our own self, that's when things really start to change. And that's where the effect that you can have on other people is, it's huge.
Yes, yes, yes. It's like the thing of, you can only give others what you give yourself. You've got to make sure that you're in this place when you are readily available to give what you can, and in the best way. And I'll sort of apply this liberally to anything. I did a movie in September, and one of the other actresses, we were up on the bus to set, and she was really, really upset because she'd made this comment to the director about, you know, something about the story, and she wanted to make sure it was being served and it was being honored, and he'd been a bit worried about it or something. And she was really worried. And I went and I said to her, but what you put to him, that was done with really good intentions. You were just serving the story. You weren't doing anything nasty. You didn't insult him. You didn't insult the story. You didn't insult the script. You just went, I've heard this information. This may help you. It's his choice whether he takes it or not. But you don't need to worry and stress, because your intention didn't come from this place of like wanting to avoid or wanting to fix or wanting to do anything. It came from a place of just trying to serve the story. And she said I was very wise. And I was like, well. But it's when I know that if in the past, when I was really unwell, if I'd tried to do anything, especially if it was something like helping another person, or which I did in like bucket loads, it was done from a place of seeking validation, of seeking reassurance that they were there for me, of trying to imprint myself into their life so I was invaluable. It wasn't coming from a place of just going, I'll help you because you need help. It was going like, I'm really important. I promise I can do really good things for you. And it was done with so much tension and so much stress. There was no lightness of touching. There was no touching with a feather and going, I'll help you because I can, because I have the tools available, because I have the energetic space available, because I have the love to give. It was done for this strange ulterior purpose, which was so unhelpful, because it meant I ended up doing things in a way that wasn't beneficial for me or for the other person.
I think the point is that it's not really an ulterior motive. It's because we have this unfulfilled need for love, right? Yeah. So it's a place of scarcity of love that we feel for ourselves and that we feel in our life. So it's not negative, but when it comes from that place of scarcity rather than from a place of abundance, of, you know, feeling in our power, in a regulated state, that changes everything. So I think it's also really important to be compassionate towards ourselves when we think back. You know, that was a time where I was connecting from a place of of scarcity, of love.
Yeah, I didn't, like desperation.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to give myself and how to let myself see. Yeah. Because I hadn't done the work. And so unfortunately, it always comes down to being willing to do the work. And as you have seen, it's hard, it's tough. You have, you know, back and forth, you fall down again and again and again. And so it really is not an easy path. So we need to be mindful of the fact that, and recognize it's not easy. It's hard.
It is not easy. It is not easy in any way. And I think it is good to remind everybody of that, because I certainly felt it the other day. I did a step with my sponsor, and like just cried the whole way through it. I don't know what to do. And she went, you know, it's not easy. And it was such a simple and good reminder to go, when you enter a journey of healing, it is not candlelit baths and spas and, you know, a wild sense of euphoria and pink clouds. It's tough. And it's not, and the main thing for me, what I remember is like, it's not supposed to be easy. This is not supposed to be easy. We know that this is tricky, and that's why it's worth it. And that's how you know it's worth doing, because if it was easy, we would have done it ages ago. Of course it's not easy. And I've learned very much to, I think it's important to mention as well, to really forgive forgive the behavior I exhibited when I was in survival mode, when I was very, very unwell, like incredibly unwell, with a multitude of undiagnosed disorders, untreated mental illness. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was floundering, completely floundering. And nothing was ever malicious. I was just doing my best with the tools that I had, which were minimal. It was like trying to climb Everest with a lollipop stick and a pair of ballet shoes. It was crazy. And there are so many things that I did and things that happened that I'm so, have been for so long, so riddled with shame and guilt and pain. And, but I'm trying to go, you didn't mean to. You're really sick. You're really unwell. And you were very much fighting for survival. And I had to reparent myself completely in my late 20s. And it's okay. It's okay. And I'm a huge believer in everything happening for a reason now. And I'm now so grateful for what transpired, because it did. I don't think I would have had the gumption to begin this journey of healing, to begin the journey of changing my life completely, of, you know, acknowledging addiction and everything, had I not been literally forced to, had I not been brought to the place where I actually tried to take my own life, where I was miraculously saved, to then have to start this journey. I wouldn't have been able to start without that. And so I am incredibly grateful for that, because it has completely changed my life, like completely. And given me so much perspective and compassion and empathy and love, understanding, awareness. And it's amazing. That's like we said, it's tough. It is not easy. And there are days that suck. There are days that are just terrible. When I was like, I'm sober, I'm meant to be so happy. And I'm like, this is
exactly. So I think the point is also to remind ourselves that even if, I remember one of the things that really helped me when I was going through a lot of the things was seeing my big mentors, my big teachers that I was so completely, like I adored and admired so much, seeing them struggle with things. It's not like you get to a place of enlightenment and you are, better than others. You just learn how to navigate the wave in a way that maybe doesn't completely send you, like knocks your head on the bottom of the ocean, so you're able to ride that wave a little bit better. You're still gonna fall, but maybe it's not gonna kill you. You're able to restart faster and maybe navigate better that way. But it goes on, and so I think it's really important to see that the journey never ends.
It's constantly,
working with the demons that you have in your cave at that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's why, I mentioned the fellowship quite a lot, by why everybody has a sponsor. It doesn't matter how many years you've been sober or how long you've been in the fellowship, you still have a sponsor. Because at the end of the day, we all need someone else. It doesn't get to the point of being like, finished, completed it, done. I can teach. I'm now the overseer of this thing. Like, you never get to that point, because we are constantly learning and things are cropping up that we then have to deal with. And we maybe have a response that we haven't seen before, which we then have to sort of look at and go, where's that coming from? But I think while it sounds so perilous and difficult, and it is hard, this journey, and the fact that it is never ending, it's also just it's so wonderful. It's such a relief. It's such a relief to know that it continues and it grows, and knowing that these demons are going to come in anyway, regardless of where you're at or what's going on, really. And it's just how you choose to approach them is what differs.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things that you understand at a certain point is that you don't have to be alone in that cave. You know, you can get the support of people, and you don't have, like, you're still lovable even if you show up with your demons. And so you can accept it's okay to get help from other people. It's okay to show up as a very, as someone who's doing that work. Because one of the things that we see is that people, you know, they want to show a face of themselves to the world, and then it's like the tip of the iceberg, and then everything is underneath, is hidden, and that's the problem. When we bring those parts of ourselves forth, we are able to attract the kind of people around us who can accept us also with our limits and our struggles. That is the big thing that, you know, we want to attract and get the support of people that we are feeling safe showing all of our sides. Yeah. That is the key element of getting support, of getting the help.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.